The Bible on the left is a Swahili Bible, and Swahili is a language that is spoken in several of the countries that surround Burundi, one of which would be Tanzania, Kenya, and so on and so forth. The Bible on the right is actually in Kirundi, and that language is actually specific just to Burundi. Kirundi, and it's kind of convenient that it sounds like the country, Burundi. Kirundi is just for people in Burundi there. So anyone that speaks that language outside of that country is probably a refugee of some sort or had family from that area. So it's kind of a uniquely centered language. But anyway, it's not that it'll do you any good to be able to understand what it says, but for the sake of curiosity, you might enjoy taking a glance at that along with some other things, and there's a couple of maps as well. We were gone for 6 weeks, and so it's going to be very hard to try to consolidate all that happened during that time into 45 minutes to an hour. So I promise I will do my best to make it be consolidated and to try to give you the best overview that I can. My wife and I initially wanted to take this trip after we met a couple from Burundi, Jesse and Joy Johnson. Several of you, maybe many of you, might remember them from around January sometime when they were here in the Midwest. They happened to come here. I say happened to come here. I believe it was the work of the Lord to bring them here and kind of have them give a report when they did. Because at that time, my wife and I were looking at East Africa and looking at Tanzania, which is one of Burundi's neighbors. And we were actually following some of Jesse and Joy's family who are missionaries over there. And it was almost like the Lord led us by a roundabout way to be introduced to Jesse and Joy Johnson and what they're doing there in Burundi. So kind of a roundabout way, there's way too much detail to give you as far as how everything came together, but we were very interested to go after we met Jesse and Joy. They invited us to come. During our conversations with them here, there was many things that piqued our interest and helped us to wonder if maybe the Lord would put us into a situation where we would work with them together over there as far as needs that they had there and skills that Sony and I may have had or whatever the case may be there. So the Lord worked. Everything came together. The elders agreed to ship us on over there, and that was a great blessing. We're grateful for that. And so go ahead and tell you what happened over there. So this would be the Burundian flag. I don't know what the colors mean and what the symbols mean. It wasn't high on my priority list to learn, so I won't take up precious time trying to explain it to you either. But we went to visit this couple, of course, Jesse and Joy, and their three boys. Of course, Neil and Alex, I'm sure would say Sebastian remembers these three boys pretty well, and they're fans of Star Wars, Legos, and other things like that. But we had a very, very good time with Jesse and Joy. And so we went to this tiny country of Burundi. Most people have never heard of it, and pretty much couldn't tell you where it is. But it's very, very small. And you almost wouldn't know where it was unless we had an arrow pointing to it. It's right at the very top part of Lake Tanganyika there, you can see. Lake Tanganyika is famous for one main thing that I can think of. It's the second deepest lake in the world. So you get over there and you get in the water and it's very clear water. And then the farther south you go, it gets even more clear. So had the privilege of being able to do a little bit of snorkeling one or 2 days while we were there, and you can see for 30 feet or more at least in parts. So it's very, very nice water there. But there in Bujumbura being the capital, here's some information. The main languages, I mentioned Kirundi being the main language there. Swahili is definitely a presence with all the influence, and about 10 years ago there was a whole large amount of war that was going on in that region. Burundi is just south of Rwanda, and I'm sure all of you have heard to some degree or another about the wars going in Rwanda and just all the havoc that caused. wars in Congo, Rwanda, Burundi, you had refugees from every one of those countries going every which direction. And so you have a lot of cross-mixing of languages. And so you have a lot of Swahili present there in Burundi today, and especially there in the capital of Bujumbura. As far as a official government language, it would be French. And the reason being is because Burundi was actually a colony of the French, and it's been recently, somewhat recently, had as a colony of Belgium, and they are currently independent. And so French is an influence there as well in the schools, in the government, and so that's another language to take into consideration. Burundi is very densely populated, and I want to let you know that it's not flat by any means. Geographically speaking, its topography is very hilly, very almost mountainous. And so for it to be densely populated, you have people that live all along these slopes, steep slopes, all over the entire country. And it's not very easy living. Many of these people farm on the slopes, and they have it landscaped out to where they can do so. And so to get your water often requires many of these people to go down the mountain in the morning, bring back jugs of water, and it takes an immense portion of their day. We've seen a lot of people carrying a lot of water up very long hills on several of our trips. So it's very densely populated, over 10 million people. And Burundi is no bigger than the state of Maryland, so that gives you a little bit of an idea there. And as far as religious beliefs there, you would have Catholic being the main presence there with 62%, and you can read the numbers for yourself. And Islam isn't as big of a presence as you might think, only at 10%, but in the surrounding areas, there's quite a bit of that, quite a bit of Islam. The countries that surround, especially in Tanzania, that numbers jump pretty significantly. So that gives you a little bit of an idea about the religions of the country there. And where Sonia and I spent most of our time was in the capital of Bujumbura. And we spent it here where this convenient circle is. And I actually stole this map offline. And if any of you remember Joy Johnson when she was here, she probably talked about the Discovery School. And it's something she's very much involved with. And it's a school for children. It's a means to an end. It's an opportunity to get to share the gospel with kids in the classroom, which is a very open opportunity. And so there's a school there, and it's actually run by the assemblies. I'm excited to share some of this information with you. I'll tell you in a little bit here. If you can see there, here we have Lake Tanganyika, and here's the city of Bujumbura, and here's where the property is, where Jesse and Joy operate out of, and here's an expanded view of the property. You can see that the property itself is fairly open, but it's surrounded by a great crush of the city. The city literally grew around it. This property has been there and used by the assemblies for the last, 50 years. Jesse's grandfather was the one that started the work there. And so they were able to maintain this property, and the city literally grew around it. And this 50 years later, it's just a massive city of over a million people. And so you have a property here. And there's a very neat thing about this property. It's not owned by Jesse and Joy. It's not owned by missionaries. This property was willed to the Burundian assemblies by Jesse's grandfather, Carl Johnson. And so everything that is on this property is assembly owned and assembly run by the national Burundians themselves. And that's a really, really neat thing to see. And one reason that's so profound is how much is actually going on this property. This property is, I'm trying to picture it in my mind, it's about 3/4 of a mile by 3/4 of a mile. It's a decent chunk of property. And there's a lot more going on this property than I ever realized when they came and gave the report here. So let me show you a little bit of what's going on here. This here is the Discovery School. They've got about 500 kids there. on a day-to-day basis that they're teaching. Young children from preschool up through kindergarten ages. And they're looking to expand and actually add a section of high school here. In fact, they just got a grant to start breaking the ground on that project. Like I said, it's a means to an end. And it's really neat to be able to see the impact that they're able to have on such a large group of kids there. This here is a medical center. And this was started by Jesse's grandmother. And it continues today. The director of the medical center is a Burundian, and he's also the vice chair of the Burundian executive board for the assemblies. So he's a man of influence, a very humble man. I appreciated getting to know him a little bit. His name is Phineas. And there's a great amount of people that come every day right to this medical center. This is the main gate where you entered into the whole property. And so the medical center and the school are right there, right at the front of things. And one thing I'll have you know is that over the course of a day, you probably have at least 1,000 people that come from the community outside that come onto the property through the Discovery School, through the medical center, and through a couple of these other things. A couple of these other things would be the deaf school, for example. There's a massive deaf school. By massive, I mean for Africa, it's big. They have a lot of students. We traveled halfway across the country to go to a conference, and I was meeting alumni from that deaf school at some of these conferences halfway across Burundi, 3 hours drive or so. And so that was really neat for to be able to see that they were reaching people not just in their neighborhood, but in the whole country. And of course, again, it's a means to an end. They're reaching people, but the gospel is always the motive behind it. Another thing you have here is a small Bible school for assembly elders. The assemblies are growing fairly quickly over there, but it's almost impossible for them to keep up with teaching and discipleship. And so the church leadership over there is needing all the training they can get, all the discipleship they can get. And so this is a way that that is able to take place. Now, bear in mind, these men have to make a living. They have a livelihood that they have to look after. Many of them have families. And part of that family is at least 6 kids, usually. That's the average amount of kids that each family has. So there's a lot that they have to do to provide for their family. So for them to come to a Bible school, they're only able to do that about 3 months out of the year if it works out really well. But that's there. And then over here you have where the Johnsons live. And again, this is not their home. They do not own it. They rent it from the assemblies, and they live there. And they try not to be in a fishbowl. I'm going to tell you right now, it's a fishbowl over there. You are a Mzungu, which means you are a white foreigner. And there is absolutely no way to be conspicuous. What I mean to say is there's no way to be inconspicuous. You're always conspicuous. All right. So anyway, that gives you a little bit of an idea of what's on the property. This is actually an assembly right there on the property. That's what they would refer to as the Kigobe assembly there. That assembly has a couple of hundred people in it and about 14 choirs. So during the week when they have their practices, they're spread all out over the lawn here, and you can hear them all across the property singing their songs, and it's pretty cool. Sonia and I stayed here in one of the guest houses. These two duplexes here are kind of the Mzungu buildings for people that come through to work and to do various things. And so part of what I did was worked on fixing this one up and putting a water system in for it and various other things. There's also some Burundians that live on the property here in these ovals and these circles. There's some of them are the directors of various ministries here. Some of them are the teachers at the Discovery School and just general workers. So the one thing, if I had to say one thing about this property, the one thing I would really praise it about is that it is not your stereotypical concept of a missionary compound, if you will. It's not a place, it's not a fortress where the missionaries go after a day's work and where they seclude themselves to. It's actually something that very much draws the community in. And it's able to be a light to people there. So you get to be in more of a fishbowl, but it's a really neat opportunity too. I'm going to quickly show you some pictures of some of these ministries there on the compound. The Discovery School here is up and running right now. It started about 2 weeks before we came back to the States. It's in full force, and here is Parfait. He's one of the teachers teaching a group of children there. And Parfait is a really neat guy. I got to spend some time with him, and he's an orphan, and he's about 20, 21 years old. And he's really, really just interested in serving the Lord, though. So that's really exciting to see just the heart that some of these young people have. And, of course, they're able to interact with the children and be a testimony to them. And that's probably the biggest thing for the teachers, is not to teach the children how to read and write, but to model Christ for them. So they have a big job in that regard. And here's Joy Johnson here leading some of the kids into a classroom, and the medical center is there in the background, you can see. Here's a couple of the teachers doing a training session. These were some of the new teachers for this year. So this one here for sure is Alan, and then I'm a little shaky on the rest of the guys' names there. But I had a good conversation with him for a while. And before we left, we were able to get a picture with the teachers there, and many of these teachers, Sony and I were able to have a Bible study with twice a week, going through the book of John, and so that was a real blessing as well. So a lot of potential here. If you could just take this one group alone, this one group of people, and if you could invest in this one group of people, they have 500 lives they're touching, and that right there could multiply itself immensely. I mean, if you had one or two people that could disciple this group right here, just the impact it would make would be incredible. So there's a lot of opportunity there. And the medical center is touching people physically, of course, but of course the gospel is there as well, always in the background, always the motive behind everything. And didn't get too many pictures of that, but they have a place where they can do some eye surgery. They've got a guy that can come through and do eye surgery. They've got a section of it that's for mothers that are pregnant and delivering and whatnot, and so on and so forth. They do other basic medical needs and examinations. So they're able to be an impact there. And then the Timothy Bible School, again, happens once a year, but it's fairly modest and small, and the teachers are, some of them are national, and then Jesse will do some teaching there as well, and if I was to go back, I might do some of that myself. So that's one thing going on there. The Deaf School, here's a couple of pictures from this. Again, very modest, but again, by African terms, it's very modern and very very up-to-date. So it's just different coming from the United States to get to see how things are done there. I don't know if any of you know this gentleman here. This is Tim Foster. Anybody know who Tim Foster is? Anybody from Emmaus? Al knows Tim Foster. Okay. Tim Foster is the son of the guy that started this deaf school. And so he actually came by with his wife and daughter and visited while we were there, just to see what was going on. His mother had been looking after the deaf school, but she was not doing so well, as far as I understand, with her health, and so it was necessary for him to kind of take a look and see how things were going. And so they were able to come through and visit. So he really enjoyed getting to visit this place here, and they actually went to Congo as well to a conference. One of the other ministries they have is a film team that shows evangelistic films. And they travel to various parts of the country, and they can set up right in a village square, and they have a generator, and they have a projector, and they've got all this stuff, and they can show a film at night. And they've got some very good films. And so these guys are young, and they do a pretty good job. I mean, I'd say there's probably five or six guys in that vehicle, and you can't see them all. But at least half of them are probably younger than I am. And these guys are taking off. And, you know, a lot of these guys have already put in a full day's work. And now they're leaving for the evening. And they're going to go show films. At this particular point, they're leaving to go to a conference in Kayanta, which is a little more to the northeast. And Jesse and I followed a day later up to that conference as well. So I'll tell you just briefly a little bit more specifically about how I was involved there, what I ended up doing with my time. Of course, I did the work project kind of things. I fixed a floor that had kind of broken in and collapsed and had to restructure it and support it and all that kind of stuff. And before the kids came back to school, I fixed the rope ladder for them on the playground. And there's kids there for a summer program. And in between their little classes that they have for the summer program, they're all coming out to check out the Mzungu, okay? And they're pretty hesitant at first, but they warm up to you. They figure I'm not going to bite them or cut them with my saw or something. But anyway, in a minute or two, I had to start worrying about them taking my stuff, man. They were starting to grab all my drill. You know, as soon as they found out my drill made noise and it spun around, they were, like, grabbing it and trying to run away with it. So I pretty much figured that when they came out of class, I just had to stop work because it was work or lose all my stuff. So they were warmed up pretty quick. And I also built a platform, put a water tank on, a 1,000 liter water tank. The way they do some of the water systems there is they just use gravity as a pressurizer for your water. So you have a collection tank down low. It collects water from the city, which is very inconsistent and has very little pressure. So you collect your own water, and then you have a submersible pump, and that pumps it up to the top tank. And then you get a gravity feed from the top tank into your house. And that's what gives you pressure, water pressure in your house. I don't know if we would call it water pressure here, but it's water coming out of the tap nonetheless. So anyway, I built a platform for that, and no, this isn't two platforms side by side. It's the same platform, just from a different angle, and a different picture. But I think I kind of had some of the Burundians worried because they don't build with wood over there. Not anything that has to be structural, at least. You either do it with brick or you do it with metal. And well, the problem is that metal's really expensive. And the problem is that brick's really expensive and time consuming. So I built something with wood and had to make it structurally good. And I think the guys were waiting for it to collapse as soon as we filled the tank, and it didn't. I think I disappointed a couple of them, but they'll get over it. And then, of course, having to hook the water tanks up to the house, and I'll skip through some of this. It's not terribly interesting to you if you're not a plumber or anything. And then, of course, you can see the end product is the tank here, the collection tank here, and then there's one side of the duplex over there and another side of the duplex here that are hooked up, and they have water. Mission accomplished. So the two wacky pictures for the day. Anybody know what this is? Not now. Okay, time out. If you saw my Facebook page, and if you saw this picture on my Facebook page, you can't answer this question. But does anybody have a clue what that is? And I'll give you a hint. They're taking these metal poles and they're burying them in the ground, and they're making a bamboo fence that goes around. Anybody have any idea? I honestly don't blame you. That's a welder. So the ladies might be like, well, I never would have guessed anyway. But guys, if you have any idea what a welder looks like, well, that doesn't look like a welder to me. And all they have is a bunch of wire wrapped around, and then they got cloth covering it. And then this is how they splice in the power to the welder, and then he tacks a little ground onto one of the poles, and now he's over here welding. And he uses sunglasses as his eye shield there. So anyway, yeah, I decided to walk away carefully before I got electrocuted or something. But and then I decided to hit myself in the face with a wrench, and that didn't work out too good. But on a more serious note, I also got to put some of the working stuff aside and got to spend some time doing Bible studies, like I said, with the Discovery School teachers. And then one study I had twice a week was with just this one guy, Isaac. And he's from a really bad background. His father's an alcoholic, and his mother has a bunch of children that she's trying to take care of. And his father's not a believer, and his family, most of his family have come to know the Lord. But it's just a really tragic situation where he's just super young, and it's all he can do to kind of make it in life to get any kind of schooling and whatnot. So he's learning English reasonably well, and we can communicate pretty well, and he's super excited about studying the Word, so we got to have some good times there together. Another thing I got to do was speak at an assembly there in Burundi. This is called the Hillside Assembly, just because I can't remember what the name of it was. But you'll see why I call it the Hillside Assembly, and it's because it overlooks the city of Bujumbura. It has a phenomenal view. And if it wasn't so hazy, you'd be able to see it really nicely. On a clear day, you can see all the way across the Congo, and you can see the Congo Mountains over there. But this was literally a Sermon on the Mount, if you will. And we were actually the first white people to ever visit that assembly. So they never had Mzungus come through before. They never had white people come through before. And so it was kind of neat. It was really kind of neat to be there. And afterward, they have a tradition of food and fellowship with the people that came by as visitors and whatnot. So we got to have conversations, as they call it, afterward. There was little speeches that were made formally back and forth. And we would finish the meal, and then this guy gave a formal speech kind of a thing to welcome us and to thank us and to give a history of the church. And then Jesse had to give a response and so forth. And then this guy over here gave another speech, and then back and forth. And then finally I threw something in there. And it was neat. So got to go to this conference that I mentioned in Kayanza. And these are conferences that are themed. They have a theme. The theme of this one was Hebrews chapter 2, I think, verse 2. I might have the reference wrong, but it was talking about how we need to hang on to what we've learned, lest we forget, unless we turn our backs on what we've learned. And I'm totally paraphrasing right now, but it's interesting. The teaching is all geared on that theme. All the songs that the choir sings are about that theme. And so you have something there for the believers, but then there's also a very clear gospel message for anybody from that village, wherever the conference happens to be. And at this particular conference, there you're only seeing about a third of the people. There's just as many people over here as there are over on this side. And so there was probably 2,000 people there. It was pretty different from being in the United States. Apart from the Rise Up Conference in North Carolina, I'd never seen that many believers come together for something before. It was just really interesting, especially when these people have better things to do. They've got, quote, better things to do than stand around all day. They have a living they have to make. These people have to survive, and they are on the verge of survival. I mean, they really don't have much at all. But they take time away from that, and they will come out for 2 or 3 days, and they will not eat. They will do other things like that. They'll sleep on the ground. Some of the kids that were here, they slept in the ditches at night just so they could be here, you know, so they could be out of the way and so they could be able to be there for the next day and whatnot. Just a really different mindset in that way. So I hope I'm not painting too broad of a stroke on American Christianity in general, but it just seems like there was so much more interest in taking time out of our busy lives to go to a conference and learn about Lord's work and His Word. So this was another conference we went to, and I'm just calling this the El Segundo Conference, just because I don't remember what it was called, what the place was called, and I think El Segundo means the second or number two or something like that. So it was the second conference we went to. But Harry Johnson was able to be there for that one, and this is Harry Johnson, the father of both Jesse and Danny, and also the father of Luke Johnson, who works in Tanzania. and he was able to be there. And so this is part of their formality. They invite any guests, and you know, the guests give a who we are, where we're from kind of a thing. And of course, a vast majority of the people are aware of who Harry is because of his work in Burundi and Tanzania. So, and then, I don't know what it is, but I must have had like dirt on my face or something, because I just had this, Sony and I had like this massive group of kids just surrounding us and staring at us after the conference. It was like, what, my, you know, I have a something hanging out of my nose, or like, what's going on, you know? So we were trying to like kind of break the awkwardness and like, oh man, what do we got? We got to do something. We got to, got anything we can juggle, or like, you know, can you stand on your head or something to try to entertain these kids? And so Sonia was, I don't remember everything we did, but we were trying to figure out simple things we could try to teach them. And so we were trying to teach them how to play rock, paper, scissors, and we taught them the song Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes, and just silly stuff like that, just to try to break up the uneasy stare that we were getting. So that was interesting. But so that's some of the things I was involved with. Sonia, of course, was at that last conference as well, but some of the other things that Sonia was directly involved with was some data entry for the Discovery School. And she was really helping with financial records and things like that that were needing to be entered and whatnot. And you're gonna see some pictures of this. She was doing some library work also, helping organize things, helping to get curriculums materials together for so before the school season started, you know, so they'd have materials. And so she was a great help in that sense. And of course, working there in the office, this is one of the teachers there at the school, Alphonsine. And so helping teach Alphonsine, actually I think it was Alphonsine helping Sonia with the records were in French, if I remember right. And so Sonia's supposed to enter this data into the computer, and Alphonsine can't use the computer, and Sonia can't speak French. So they were like trying to collaborate, and I think they managed to get it. But Sonia also was able to make friends with several of the young ladies around there. And this is Nema. She was one of the ladies who helps the Johnsons with their youngest boy, Elliot, at times. So she was able to befriend her. So that's kind of Burundi in a nutshell. Tanzania's report is a lot shorter, so you don't have to hold your breath too long here. But before we leave Burundi, just a couple of observations. Some observations about some good things that we observed, and some observations about some things that we thought were kind of non-positive notes. So a couple of the positive things were the work there, it's ready. I mean, all you got to do is pack up and go over there and drop. And if you can speak, I mean, these teachers, they speak English. So even just the teachers, without knowing any other language, you could walk in there and you could start discipling these teachers. But if you knew Swahili, you could reach about half the people that come through that compound. If you knew Kirundi, you could reach anybody in the country. And so the work is there. I mean, one of the huge needs is discipleship. And there are so many young people, and there are so many people that are interested but just don't have stuff available to them to learn. So the work is, it's just sitting there. And all it needs is people to come, laborers to come, and to take it up and run with it. The people are very friendly, very receptive, and they're very responsive to the work. They want to know truth, and they want it to affect their lives. And in fact, so much so that there's, I'm not making a doctrinal statement here or anything, but they are completely against drinking at all. Like, the Christians there do not drink at all, just because of all the problems that it has and all the connotations that it has in their culture. It's just something they're very adamant against, and that's just how much they're wanting to be a testimony before other people. So that's very, very exciting to see. The opportunity that you have with people, it's all right there. I mean, you don't have to leave where you're at even. There's plenty of work to do outside in the city and in the rest of the parts of the country, and that's definitely something that should be done and needs to be done and is being done. But it's amazing how much of it actually comes right to you. So that's a really neat thing there. And one of the main things is the chemistry that Sony and I were able to have with the Johnsons there. What a neat time we had with them. Really neat couple. Just as we got to visit with them, as we got to talk about visions for the kind of work that could be done. Talking about some of the issues, the problems that were there, and being able to talk about some what the Word of God had to say about certain things. Just to be able to discuss vision and theological things and practical things, we really found ourselves just on the same page with these people. Really neat. Really, a big blessing for us. So those were some definite positives. And some of the things that weren't quite so positive that we noticed were things such as the literacy of the people. For the work there, a hindrance to the work is the literacy of the people. Now, most people don't get much of an education above second or third grade unless you have a means to go on to further education. So that affects how people can read the Bible. It affects their comprehension, especially because the way that they're taught in what schooling they do have is often not with critical thinking. A lot of the way that they're taught is through rote. It's through memorization. It's through story form. And we found this to be a pretty big problem, even in our class with the Discovery School teachers. We would read a passage when we were doing that study through the book of John with the Discovery School teachers. We would read a passage, and then we'd finish that. And I would pose a question, something like, you know, so what would you say would be the main thing that Jesus is trying to say here? How would you summarize what happened here? How would you summarize Jesus feeding the 5,000? How would you summarize what Jesus said? What's the main idea? Or anything like that. They do not know how to summarize. For the vast majority of them, they don't understand that concept. It's not been taught to them. Everything they've learned is in story form. It's all memorization. And for them to try to give you a summary, they go back and they repeat the whole thing, almost word for word, all the way through. So it's very interesting because they're not able to mentally break down things and separate them out and categorize them and then pick out the main points, the main ideas. And so that does affect their comprehension. It does affect how they interpret the Bible. And it certainly affects how they apply the Bible. In fact, you can have a question. You know, in this passage, why did these people do this? For example, Jesus feeds the 5,000. Then Jesus goes over the lake. And everybody goes, where'd Jesus go? And they go follow him over the lake. And they find him there and say, Rabbi, when did you come here? And he tells them, I'm telling you, you're not seeking me because you saw the miracles. You're only seeking me because you ate the bread and got a full stomach. And you can ask him a question and say, why did the people follow Jesus across the lake? And you can even put the verse right next to the question so they know what verse to refer to find the answer. And it doesn't connect. Whatever comes to mind is what the answer is that they'll give. And so there seems to be a lack of an objective way for them to study and understand and interpret and apply the Bible. And many of the applications that they give from something is somewhat off the wall. So there's a zeal for the Word of God. There's a zeal for understanding. But there's a great need for someone to come along and to assist them in that. And if we could improve literacy, that would help because people would be able to study the Word themselves and read it themselves, but even then you need the teaching and the discipleship to help them with their interpretation of it, their understanding of it. So that's something that is really a need there. And then also is a little bit of a mentality of dependency on people. You're not a true friend unless they can come and depend on you, and vice versa. You're not a true friend unless you can ask them for something and they can ask you for something. There's a dependency there. And there's also a dependency on people that are above you socially in a hierarchy kind of a way. And it doesn't matter what station of life you come from, it doesn't matter what you have and don't have, if you are a Mzungu, you are automatically up here. So there's a dependency on that, in a sense, for financial things and to lead the way in things and other things like that. And there's also a sense of entitlement. Now, this wasn't quite as bad as it was in Tanzania. Tanzania was bad. People, you know, they come up and they some people will ask you for money. Some people will just flat out tell you to give them money, and or other things like that. And there's a sense of entitlement that kind of rubbed me the wrong way a couple of times. So that's, you know, that's just something that's there, and you just got to deal with it. So those are some closing thoughts on Burundi. Tanzania, the flag looks like this. Again, no significance that I'm aware of. I'm sure there is significance. I don't know what it is. I'm going to move on. We went there to visit two couples, Harry and Ruth Johnson. And this was the couple we initially were interested in. We were initially piqued by an article they wrote in the Missions Magazine. The magazine is there in the back. No, I didn't bring that one with me. Never mind. The one where they wrote this article was the December issue of 2011. And they had an article about a ship that they had built so that they could use it to go around the lake to various villages that are very secluded and reach people that way. And so Sonia and I kind of got interested, not so much about the ship aspect of thing, but just some of what they said about the people there, about the darkness of the beliefs of the people there, and how even till recently there's been reports of child sacrifice and things like that in Tanzania. So a lot of darkness there, and there's a great influence of Islam as well. So we initially got interested in that, and so we started keeping track of them. We saw that they had several kids that were missionaries in Burundi and in Tanzania, and so they got us into this whole thing. So in our trip to Burundi, we wanted to be sure to go down and see them and see what was going on down there. So we went to visit them, and of course, working there with them is their son Luke and his wife Gina. And they have two girls, Esther and Emily. And we got to know them a little bit as well. And Luke is he's a very quiet and reserved kind of a guy, and it took him a while to warm up to me. I cracked a sarcastic joke here and there, and he thought I was serious, and so I had to, I'm kidding. And he warmed up to me after a while. But anyway, they're doing a good job down there, and enjoyed our time with them. And of course, they're in the country of Tanzania, which is slightly larger than Burundi. And that's sarcasm, too. But it's about twice the size of California. Actually, bigger than twice the size of California. And so we spent our time in Kigoma, and right a little bit north of there and a little bit south of there, so didn't travel too far, and you can see there's plenty of the countryside to travel. Dar es Salaam would be the capital, but technically Dodoma is the legislative capital, so it's kind of a shared situation there. And I knew some folks that were in Iringa while we were out there, some friends from New Tribes, but there was no way we were going to be able to make it to see them while we were there. We were only in Tanzania 10 days. So we spent most of our time in Kigoma. It's a four-hour drive from Kigoma up to Bujumbura. And some of the road is good, and some of the road is not good. So it was an interesting ride. But the main languages in Tanzania would be Swahili. And there's a big push for English in the schools and the government. There's a very big push by the government to have everyone learn English. So that's a really good sign. That means it's much more open for people to come that don't have a different language that they know. Population is fairly large. It's four times larger than that of Burundi, but granted that the country is a lot larger, it makes perfect sense. And you can see the religion breakdown there is Christian would be 30%, Muslim 35%, and indigenous beliefs 35% as well. And then just off to the just off the coast of Tanzania is the island of Zanzibar, and that is 99% Muslim. So it is kind of almost its own little country there. But there's several things going on in Tanzania. It's a different field altogether. We got down there and it just feels completely different. It's not as, nothing's nearly as close together as it is in Burundi. And I guess some of that makes sense. It's a bigger country, it can be more spread out. But there's a lot less going on as far as assemblies. There's significantly less assemblies in Tanzania. There's over 100 in Burundi, and I didn't quite catch a full number for Tanzania, but the ones that are there are kind of few and far between and really spread out. So there's various things going on. There are the evangelistic film trips that they do by boat, and they do it by vehicle as well on the roads. They visit various assemblies, which I got to do with Luke and Gina. The first Sunday I was there, we went south of Kigobe, and you'll see a picture of that. They have traveling seminars to help train the people even more, which is helpful. There is a Bible school in the northern part of Tanzania, but it's a couple days' drive for Luke, and Luke teaches there some, and it takes a couple days one way for him to get there, so that's a bit of a jaunt. And there are some local Bible studies and kids' clubs, and Sonia actually got to visit a lady with a group of other ladies, visit a lady that was sick. So, of course, I went on the trip. I also spoke at two assemblies, got to help Harry and Luke with a few small projects there. And this was the first assembly there south of Kigobe. It was about 2 hours' drive. And it is tiny. This is literally grassroots kind of operation going on here. There was a very small group here, and there was a couple of guys that came with us here on the left to teach a little Sunday school lesson to whatever kids were there. This assembly is right by a little clump of houses, and there was some Muslim families living there, and they allowed us to teach a lesson to their kids, and that was neat, and then got to share a message with them before we left. And then this is the sorry, I've been saying Kigobe. I meant to say Kigoma. Kigoma Assembly in Tanzania. And this is the one there nearest to where the Johnsons are. And this was one of the guys doing a Sunday school lesson there as well. And then I was able to speak, and then Luke translated for me into Swahili. And Sonia, I mentioned what she did, except for this part here. She also helped with the girls' club, when we were there. It's a girls' club that Ruth does with the kids there. And so this is a picture of some of the girls and some of the crafts they were working on. They made little blankets. So that's a picture of that. But this is kind of the meat of the presentation for Tanzania, is the film trip that we went on, and there's some pictures of that trip. So we're getting the boat all rigged up and loaded up with the gear, and as we're heading out, Luke is helping get the sails up. And these sails are pretty cool. They're actually stitched flour sacks, so you have nothing but flour sacks for your sails and jibs and whatnot. So we sailed a few miles up the coast, and here in the distance you have one village here. It's kind of a village in two parts because the beach is a little broken up. This is the part we went to, but this is Kugongo. And this is the main village that we shared the films in. And then around this point here, I didn't quite get it in the picture, there's another village there that we visited on foot called Kigaye. And so we got to see two villages there, and neither one of these has a road that goes to it. I mean, it is like, if you don't have a boat, you can't get there. And they're not listed on any map. I just tried to Google map them today, and they're not even listed. You can find them on the satellite view on Google map, but you can't. There's no names for them listed, nothing. They're unlisted villages. So we got to go there and show films, and course, as we started to get closer, the crowd started to gather, and the Mzungus are coming, you know, and the crowd gathers, and we start to offload, and one of the teachers from the Kigoma assembly was able to do a lot of activities and lessons with the kids, and man, did he have a way with those kids. So he got to really have an impact there. And Sonia and I are just about useless there, I hate to say it, because we don't know the language. And, you know, all we're really good at for is getting looked at, I guess. You know, just, we can't really talk to anybody. We can just smile and, hey, you know, and watch and whatnot. But it was neat. We both got to be involved a little bit to some extent or another. And I was able to talk to one young guy that knew English. Luke and I were able to have a conversation with him. After the first night that we showed films, no sooner did we get up the next morning than he's out by our sailboat in a rowboat wanting to get in the boat and talk to us. And we're just like, we just rolled out of the, you know, out of the hammock kind of a thing, and we're hardly awake. But this guy was, he was Muslim. He was a young guy, but he had seen the film that we showed. He was wanted to know more about the gospel, and he talked about the emptiness of Islam and the contradictions of it, and he wanted to know more about Jesus, and he was talking about how he'd seen that Jesus was powerful and whatnot. And so we sat down with him, we invited him on the boat, we sat down and just asked him some questions, and we're walking through and talking, asked him, you know, what kind of he was looking for, what he was thinking, what did he understand, and we were telling him some things that he should need to know and understand, and it was really interesting. So if you think of him, you can pray for Barak, that's his name, young guy in Kigongo. So yeah, Sonia got to hold a baby a couple of times. I got the help with the sails, and we were some help there, but we just trust the Lord will continue to use the seed that was planted there. It's hard. Even as we were there in that tiny little village, you can hear, off in the distance, you can hear the call to prayer. And, you know, there's the village is a fishing village, and so the guys are home during the day, they fish at night, and so, you know, some of the men go off and they go pray. But beyond Islam, there's one thing in that village that's actually a worse curse, I think, for the people there, and it's the video house. Have a video house there, and what they have is a big old satellite dish. In fact, I bet you can see it here. There it is. There's the video house. There's this big old satellite dish, and they have a big old loudspeaker on the roof. And what they do is they have these films that they bring in. They run a generator on the back side of the building, and they show films. And the films are translated. They're written over. A lot of them are English films. I don't know what kind of films they were, but man, I caught some of the English that was going on. They were some of the most violent films I'd ever even just heard with my ear. And it's just, the guys are flocking over there. As soon as the film starts, the loudspeaker kicks on and it draws the crowd in. And there the guys go, and that's how they spend their day, is there and watching that stuff. And so it's just, it's like, man, you know. And then the guys, they get in their fishing boats and they leave just in time for us to start setting up to show the films, because they got to get out before dark to set up so they can fish all night. And man, what a tragedy. So that's something you could pray for. It's just that's just an added part of the darkness there. But anyway, we were there for 2 days, and then we returned to Kigoma. There we are with a flour sack background, I guess, and some thoughts, some observations. Of course, I've mentioned some, but it's a big country with a big need, so that's good. It's going to be accessible because of the English, and the Swahili is relatively easy to learn. So, I mean, man, if there's laborers, head on over there, because there's opportunity. And we found that there was pretty good chemistry with both Harry and Ruth and with Luke and Gina working there. But some of the problems were just, we noticed the people were less friendly and less receptive and less responsive to the word. It was just a lot colder. The culture was more cold than in Burundi, and it made it more difficult. The sense of entitlement and dependency was significantly greater over in Tanzania, which strains relationship more because you want to be able to get close to people, but they always almost want something. There's always ulterior motives there, and it just it makes it very difficult to be able to get really close with people. And the existing work there locally in Kigoma is fairly limited. In fact, anywhere you go, it would be fairly limited, and there's nothing wrong with that. That means there's plenty of room to start new things and to work from the ground up. But it just means that there's less of a presence, there's less of a less momentum happening. And so there's if you want to be able to reach a lot of people that are already doing existing work, or if you want to be able to interact with a lot of assemblies, they're kind of far and wide, and you got to go travel to them. And sometimes it's days that you have to travel to get to them. So it's just a very different field, and there was just a lot. You can probably guess that there was just a lot for us to think about, just a lot to mull over in our mind, and so we're still in that process. And so if you could, please continue. We know you have been praying. Please continue to pray for us, that the Lord will continue to clarify if we're to return, and if so, then when? And just that His will be done. That's all we'd like, and we especially want prayer for the workers over there. A lot of them don't hear much from home, so it's always encouraging for them to hear that people are back here praying for them and that they actually have heard something about what's going on over there. And a lot of people just don't have any idea what's going on and don't know about the struggles. And so with this information I've given you, if you would, please pray for them specifically about these things. And, man, for laborers, plenty of work over there. Send them out, man. If you guys want to go yourself, there's plenty of work. So anyway, that's about all I have, and I'd be happy to take any questions if you have any. If not, that's fine. You can always catch me another time, too. All right, should I close with prayer or something? All right, let's do it. Lord, we just thank You for Your heart, just that Your heart is one that desires all mankind to be saved. You know, we sit here sometimes and we see what goes on in the world around us and we wonder, Lord, when are You going to come back? When are You going to return? And we read in Scripture that the reason You don't return is because You're not willing that any should perish. That You're only holding off because You want to give us as much time. You want to give man as much time as possible to hear the gospel and to be saved. And there's plenty of people, Lord, across this world, across this continent, that need that good news of the gospel. Lord, we just thank You that Your gospel is for all cultures, all people, all nations and languages, and that it saves to the uttermost just as equally, doesn't matter where it is in the world. So we just pray that as we've been thinking about the work being done in Burundi and in Tanzania, that You would continue to work in the hearts, to soften hearts and open understandings, Lord, so that Your word might be able to sink in and take root and grow and be beautiful before You and to just flourish. Pray for the workers there, both national and otherwise, just that You would give them courage and strength and vision and understanding and just a good testimony before the people. Just know that they have a lot of things that are discouraging to them and things that are hardships at times, but Lord, none of this is compared to what You faced on the cross on this earth to bring salvation. I just pray that You would encourage people to know that they can give all in their work for You over there and that You will, in turn, provide all that they need for wisdom, for strength. Just pray that You would send people, Lord, if any are interested, I know there's people in this room that are interested, Lord, in serving you with their lives overseas full time. Lord, it can't be about them. It's about you, your sufficiency and your strength. We just want to acknowledge you in that way tonight. And we just want you to get the glory in it all. In Jesus' name, amen. Feel free to look at anything back there if you'd like, or if you have questions, you can ask Sonia or myself, whatever.